Welcome to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop.
And Daniel. Oh my goodness, we have a show for you, Ettinger, today.
It's going to be something.
So today on the show,
are you laughing at my face?
I'm just laughing at everything. Today we have the Humane Educators of Texas, and it's always a great time when Tabitha and Kelly join us. So you're going to want to wait for that. And then the Animal Control Report has something new for you today. So you're not going to want to miss the supplemental report, and we'll introduce that here in a second. But this is going to be fun. We have a lot to cover in a short period of time. I want to just say, please check out our website, keepithumane.com. Check out our Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. Also, for you ACOs out there, did you know, just coming around the corner, and just under, literally probably like 6 weeks now, it's probably about 6 weeks, the Animal Control Officer Appreciation Week. Wow, Bishop, helped me out on that
was
one.
Hard.
Good job.
So with that being said, we have, we have some appreciation to do. Is that what we call it? Appreciation? Appreciation to do.
Appreciating?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so if you have stuff, please.
Words are hard, Dan.
They are. Please send us stuff. We've already got some photos. We've already got some videos and some nice like write-ups about agencies doing some good stuff. And we really just want to highlight that the whole week of ACO week. So usually we wait till like April 1st to start asking. We're putting it out 6 weeks in advance. So please send
us
stuff.
Mark it on your calendar.
And just, you can send it to Daniel at keepithumane.com. You can go to any of our socials and send it through the DMs. Be careful what you send through the DMs, because Bishop might have a different idea. But
you know what?
You should see some of the comments she replies back to people. So it's not me. Yeah. It's never me. It's Bishop.
Hey, I mean, all you have to do is comment first and then you'll see what you get.
On that note, please check out our sponsor, Tomahawk Live Trap. Tomahawk Live Track. This is one of those mornings, bro. Exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality, humane animal control products available. Check out their new Gravity Pro Series dog trap, or even cat traps if you get the small ones. They feature a door, and I know Tabitha and Kelly, you've seen this thing. They feature a door that you just open, and the thing sets. That's all it does. It just sets. The plate's ready to go. Animal steps on it. Door closes. You don't have to mess with the hook. You don't have to mess with the plate setting. You just open the dang door. So check it out at livetrap.com. Use Keep It Humane. Again, Keep It Humane for 10% off your order at livetrap.com. What do you think of those traps, Tabitha and Kelly?
I think they're awesome. We got to see them at the TACA conference last year, and they're so unbelievably simple to use. So
smooth.
We
they're
are
so
big fans.
Smooth. Yeah, so smooth. Yeah.
And I like how simple they are, so that if you are setting them with the public, you don't have to spend 20 minutes teaching them how to set a trap. It's just like, lift the door, set the food, and you're done.
That's it.
Or the rookies. Yes.
Yes.
All right, really quick, before we jump in with Tabitha and Kelly, I need to introduce Ray Smith to the program. Ray Smith is coming on as our expert in supplemental reports. And that is our new segment that we'll get to later in the show. You won't want to miss it. Ray, welcome to the Animal Control Report podcast.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you.
You'll rethink that. It's okay.
Where did the pug go away? Because the pug was up there for a second.
They get tired very fast, very easily.
They're like, hey, for those of you listening on Spotify, you can actually watch this video on Spotify. There's an option there, or you can go to our YouTube channel. Is it channel or channel?
What? Channel.
somebody
told me, Daniel.
Somebody told
Are
me.
Are you having word problems today,
yeah.
Dan?
No, he's having a stroke, I think.
No. Yeah. Somebody really told me straight up that I say, instead of saying channel, I say channel. Channel? Channel. Channel. How do you, okay.
Now you're just trying too hard.
Yeah.
Kelly, how do you say it?
Channel.
Tabitha?
Channel.
Of course she does. And then Ray, how do you say it?
Channel.
All right, so I'm the one. It's me. So Ray just really quick, can you tell our listeners kind of what we're going to talk about here in a little bit?
Yeah, so we have a giant need for access to vet care, and there's a bunch of new laws that have come out across several different states, and different types of legislation that are aimed to help alleviate that issue. So it's really exciting to see how many states have gotten on board with changing these laws and creating new ones for access to vet care. And it's just really exciting to see that, because it means that we, as the professionals in this field, are being listened to.
Cool. So you'll want to stick around for that segment, because there's a lot going on there. So thank you for doing some of that digging, that hard work on getting that ready. So please stay tuned for that. And I think we'll jump in to Tabitha and Kelly. I miss your faces. So it's good seeing you here. And hopefully we get to see you at the 50th annual TACA conference. I think I put in like five different class. I don't know. I just want to come back. I was like, here's five different options. Please pick me. So awesome. I hope to get to see you in San Antonio. That's in November of 2024. So stay tuned for more information. But the 50th annual conference for TACA is going to be big. Outside of that, let's talk about the Humane Educators of Texas. I just want people, they know you for that. Everybody knows Tabitha and Kelly for the Humane Educators of Texas. And we're definitely going to talk about that. But really quick, something new happened. Was it this year or late last year?
Late last year.
So yeah. We have humanehelp.org. Can we start there and then kind of get in, then we can get into the Humane Educators of Texas?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Humane Help is our new nonprofit that we started to help provide peer support resources, mental health resources, as well as training, equipment, mentorship, all sorts of things for animal welfare professionals. And this was kind of a brainchild of ours almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
When we first went through peer support training through ICISF and really seeing the need of, we need boots on the ground help with mental health. And so like I said, it's been 3 years that we've been working on this. And so last year we finally got it all finalized, got our paperwork from the IRS. We're an official nonprofit. We've got 9 people on our board. Seven are peers, or trained peers, for providing mental health kind of first aid, getting boots on the ground out there during anytime a shelter or an animal control agency has some sort of incident. And this can be a hoarding case, this can be cruelty cases, this can also just be maybe they've had something overwhelming happening at their shelter, like a disease outbreak, loss of a staff member, maybe an incident happening at the shelter involving injuries to staff. We're there to kind of show up and provide support and help walk them through the mental health challenges that they're kind of facing through those events, as well as day to day.
I love that.
I'm so excited and hate the fact that you guys are so far away from me. I think I commented that at one point in time on one of your comments on Facebook.
Yes. Well, and our long-term goal is to make this national. Of course, we're starting here in Texas first, trying to build a peer support network here in Texas. But we do eventually want to really make this go national so that these resources can be provided to all animal welfare industry across the country.
Yeah, peer support is kind of seen as the best practices for first responders. And you probably see that with your police departments or fire and EMS having their own peer support teams or access and resources to that. And we want to create that for animal welfare, because that just doesn't exist, unfortunately, outside of those select agencies that choose to involve their animal control. So hopefully in the next few years, we can get enough people trained that we can make it a national thing.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, some of the things that happen in like other law enforcement agencies. And I say that because I really think that animal control, the profession, is law enforcement, regardless if you're under a law enforcement agency, a humane society, whatever. There was just an officer, and thankfully he was not injured, or she was not injured, in Greenville, South Carolina, that just got shot at. They were there, the person in the house opened fire, and then it became a standoff with the police department. It was a whole big thing. But we're dealing with situations that are unsafe, just like any other law enforcement agency. The difference is if I was a law enforcement officer for a police department and I went to a scene. So like, let's just compare it. And people will be like, well, you can't compare animal cruelty to child abuse.
You can.
Yeah. So let's say you go to a scene and there's a pretty gnarly animal abuse case. We don't even have to get into the minutia of all of it. Why is there at this point nationally, there is no like, hey, you need to go see the whatever psychologist or whoever. Like it's mandated after certain types of cases that the police officers have to go and meet with that individual, almost to debrief, if you will.
Yeah.
And I would love to see more animal control start taking that lead on, hey, let's have some sort of check-ins after certain cases, whether it's hoarding, whether it's a really bad bite. I mean, let's be honest, we've seen some really horrible bites. I know there's listeners to the show that have been involved with deaths from dogs. And there's actually an individual who won't mind me sharing his name. He's a Texas guy. Charles Patrick Hernandez. I know you both know.
If you go back 2 years ago to TACA conference, we actually had his story on the episode.
Yeah.
He actually told us the story.
Yeah. You can find that. It's such a touching story to hear it from him of how, you know, he had to deal with a situation just like that. And he was just glossed over with his, the emotions and the things that happened there. So I love what you're doing, and I want people to check it out. So they can go to the website, humanehelp.org. Again, humanehelp.org. I know I don't do words right, so I want to make sure I'm clear on that.
.com. Well,
how many years has it taken you for you to get the website for Humane Educators right? Right.
Well, so for a long time, let's be honest. There was somebody on this program, I won't say her name, but I got it right a couple times, and she was like, no, that's not right. And I was like, no, I think it's right. And then it messed with my head because I'm like, is it right? Is it wrong? Is it right? So I'm just saying.
And then I eventually wrote it down for them.
Well, let's talk about the Humane Educators of Texas. Again, humaneeducatorsoftexas.com.
Good job.
We'd love to hear.
Cookie for Dan.
All the good things that you have going on with training. I mean, there's so much that happens if you're doing another law book this year, if that's happening, like all the fun stuff we'd love our listeners to hear about.
Yeah, we do actually have a new law book this year. We come out with our law book after every Texas legislative session, and we go into legislative session every 2 years. So our 2023 law book is available for purchase on the website or at one of our classes in person. And we'll come out with another one after the 2025 legislative session. Mostly what we're excited to come on here and really talk about is one of the questions that we get asked a lot in our classes is kind of something that we didn't really think about in the beginning, but training from the student's perspective, right? As instructors, we always think about what do we want to teach? How do we want to deliver? Things like that. But we didn't think about this until we had a lot of students start bringing up things like, how do we determine if an instructor is a good instructor? How do we know that this is a good quality class and things like that? So that's kind of what we wanted to maybe take some time today to talk about some of the things that we've experienced and good and bad over the years.
So, is this going to be like, just be honest.
Are we ripping on Dan today?
Yeah. Are you telling me?
No.
There, you know, there's moments. I have my moments at trainings. So I guess I should just pay full attention because you have great feedback.
This is not directed at anyone or group of individuals. This really, it may sound like it is, but it really, we get asked all the time because one thing that Kelly and I, when we first started teaching professionally together, we had several sit down, very serious discussions about kind of what our core ethics, maybe, so to speak, would be. And one thing that has never changed is people hate this about us as well, is that we demand excellence, and we are big on citing your source, right? We even have a sticker aside from, you know, the fan club sticker behind us, the membership card back here. We also have a sticker that says cite your source, and that's something that we're really big on because we've noticed at least here in Texas, I don't know about other parts of the country, that for years the training has always been the same couple of people, it's been the same information, and that information is not always accurate. And so we get asked sometimes by our students, well, how do we know, being a student, I pay for the class, I attend it, I assume that the information is accurate. I assume that everything is correct and being audited and all the other things that they think are happening behind the scenes. And so we thought, you know what, maybe we should crack this open and let people know what's happening.
Can I jump in? Yes. Because this is one thing that I really appreciate about you two, both of you, and you've both been able to give constructive feedback in ways that I wish more people would. And I'm not just saying this because I feel like we have a relationship because we've known each other for a long time. And, you know, we have conversations outside of just podcasts and conferences. One year, Tabitha, you came up to me and said, "Hey, Daniel, you know, you were talking about Mary Ellen Wilson and you made a joke about like her being a foster failure to Etta Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, just so you know, it wasn't Etta that adopted Mary. It was her sister. And I need to dig more. I need to put my, scholar cap on when I'm doing my research. And I take a lot of respect from that. I feel like it helps me because I don't want to give misinformation out there. That's the worst thing that we can do is supply people with misinformation. And so all the feedback that I can get, I appreciate, and I hope other speakers. I just had a phone call with a friend of mine who is a speaker, and I had to give some constructive feedback. And I've been doing it quite a bit to that individual just because I if they want to succeed long-term professionally at this, they have to be open to that constructive feedback. Otherwise, I don't know if it's going to work. So, sometimes you have to have those hard conversations. And I appreciate you doing that is my point.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I think we really wish would come back is just the art of civil discourse, being able to have civil discussions about either, like you said, constructive criticism or like, let's discuss ideas that we maybe don't see eye to eye on. And I think just kind of as a society, but definitely as an industry, we have lost that ability
for sure.
Yeah. So we kind of put I have some notes here of some things that we kind of put together for students who are looking for like what they should look for good education, whether it's a conference, a private class, a training at their whatever it is, right? So first, what makes a training good, Kelly? What do you think makes a training good? Start with that.
Personally, for me, I think it needs to be a good mixture of interaction. So asking questions, starting those discussions in the classroom, plus accurate, good information that's going to be pertinent. I hate going to trainings. And that was one of the things when we started this is we thought about all the bad trainings we've been through, you know, because we've all been through horrible classes. But those trainings where you sit there and it's death by PowerPoint, you know, the instructor's just droning on about what's, you know, bullet points on the screen and never asks any question, never involves the class. Or the class is described as one thing, but once you get in there, the instructor goes off the rails and is talking about anything but the topic that you were there to learn about. So I think it's important that we do have that interaction, but also you're still sticking to your points and sticking to what the class is about.
Yeah.
Can I give an example really quick?
Yeah, please do.
I can't go into too much detail, but there was a class that I attended.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things that the instructor said was, "I have a copy of my book. Actually, I have two copies of my book. And at the end of the session, I'm going to give away both copies of this book with random numbers, and I will autograph the books for you." This person was not famous. It wasn't like we had The Rock teaching. That kind of like that vibe right there. Look, I feel like if you're going to be an instructor, you have to have. So we talk about ego a lot. Ego and ID. Mm-hmm. Like your ID, who you are, how you know, mm-hmm. like how you identify, all that stuff. Those are normal. You have to have a set of confidence to stand in front of people. They say public speaking is one of the most feared things in this country for people to do. So you have to have a personality. You probably have to have some charisma, in my opinion, to be good at it. That's part of it. Like you have to be knowledgeable and be able to share factual information as well. But when you come across as like, you're the main character,
right.
Mm-hmm. It's a little different. And one thing that you know about me, because you've managed to probably in the courses that I've done, you've probably manage to sit through an entire one if you collect all the 3 minute segments that you've been in my class. Shots well, you know, fired.
You're hard to listen yourself. To. We can only take about 3 minutes.
We're too busy. No, but in all seriousness, you know, one thing about me is like, I try to engage with the classroom because I feel like that is so important to get their input and keep them like wanting more, wanting to learn more. And so doing that versus like, hey, it's all about me. I don't give a whatever. Right. Like if you want to buy one of these hoodies afterwards, you can hit me up and be like, oh, that's a cool hoodie. Where do I get that? But I'm not going to be up there like, go to www.humane, you know? So anyway.
No, I think that's really important. We were actually just having that discussion a couple of days ago about how in our list of like what makes a good instructor, one of them is that of course, charisma. I know you mentioned ego, and I think ego is something that gets generally a bad rap because I think if somebody has an ego and they've got a rep or they've got the qualifications to back it, I don't think there's anything wrong with that as long as they're not jamming it down people's throats. But I think the big thing with instructors or companies or whatever it is their personality, is their brand the only thing that they're able to offer? Or is there anything of substance there, right? Because you can be like the craziest person on the planet, but if there's nothing of substance there, that doesn't make for a good class or a good instructor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're saying thousands of words and the class only comes away with two or three words, mm-hmm. then that's not an effective instructor, right. My opinion.
Yeah.
I've been to classes, unfortunately. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've been to classes, unfortunately, that also misrepresent themselves in mm-hmm. giving this, you know, because you usually get a little blurb about what the class is about. And, there was one in particular, like I had to beg my supervisors to go to. And the reason I was there was literally about 20 minutes of the entire 8-hour day. And everything else was useless to me. So I would also encourage people, I mean, if you're actually out there wanting to be an instructor, think about what you're teaching and actually put a reasonable expectation of what everybody should think of what they're coming to the class for in your description, so that people aren't wasting their time.
Right. I think so too. So since you brought up, if you want to be an instructor, these are some of the things, like I look at my notes here, that we sort of wrote down to kind of narrow it down of what we think if somebody's wanting to either consider becoming an instructor or if you're looking at instructors and trying to decide who to go to. So the first one is basically your qualifications, right? That one thing we sort of joke about a lot, but it is quite serious, is years of service is not a credential, right? So just because somebody has worked in this industry for 87 years does not mean that they are a good instructor, one, but two, it doesn't mean that they've been doing everything correctly, right? And mm-hmm. just because they've received a paycheck for a job for this X number of years doesn't make them a good ACO, a good kennel attendant, good vet tech, whatever it is that they have their credential, their career in anyway. The other big thing is truthfulness. And I feel like truthfulness is one of those things that everybody's like, oh yeah, I'm truthful to a fault. And then, but then you get to talking to them and you're like, but are you, right? And are you? And so it has to be truthful. And when I say truthful, I mean, not only representing accurate information, but truthful about yourself, right? One thing that Kelly and I do all the time is we air our dirty laundry, so to speak. Like if we screw something up, we're very open and honest with our students about it, right? And we tell them when we have gone through things in our personal lives or our careers. I feel like it helps. This sounds really horrible, and I don't mean it this way, but it almost humanizes us, right? Because people tend to see instructors as this like, oh, right, they're so amazing. And that's not the case, at least not the case with us, right?
I've met you.
right. You've spent time with us, you know. So, you know, it tends to humanize us too, to make them understand that we make mistakes too. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, right? Like Dan didn't know that, you know, she was adopted by Etta's sister. Not a big deal. You know, it's not, didn't derail the whole training. It's, but being able to talk about those things that you've either screwed up, what you've learned from it, what it did to your career, what it did to your family, what it did in your whole life, I think is really important to represent that openly and honestly. We talked about citing sources. That's a big one. Kelly and I really try very hard to stick to the motto of we will not make affirmative statements without being able to cite a source, whether that's a law, an ordinance, a scientific study, a best practices, something, so that we can back that up. And we actively encourage our students to challenge us in class, which they do, and we love that. So they'll raise their hand and say like, hey, well, where are you finding that, right? If it's not in our PowerPoint, or that's contrary to what I've been told before, can we have a discussion about that? And I feel like it's a red flag if you ever do take a class or if you want to be an instructor and you're not willing to discuss something that maybe proves you wrong. I think that's a huge red flag.
Really quick, do you cite your source on each individual slide, or do you put it at the end where all your
I try and do it on each individual slide. Yeah. Do we have any where we put it at the end? I think they're all on each individual slide. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that way if somebody wants to know right then and there.
It's right
there.
Yeah,
whether it's the laws, like if we're talking about laws, the law that we're talking about, it's going to be posted in there. But if we're citing other stories or other sources, it will usually have a link on that same slide.
And I'm just asking kind of for my own when I'm doing these, because I have a new class that, well, if you're listening today, you either already missed it or it's happening now, or you can maybe make the class. It's the link between domestic violence and dog bites. So we know about the link between domestic violence and animal abuse. I did a lot of digging. And there was one study I found, one specific study that actually addressed this. And it was, the study is, not to get too far off the rails here, but I just want talking about sources. The study specifically was about fatalities from dog bites and then how they were housed, their living conditions, how they were treated. And it actually had a piece about domestic violence. And so it was really interesting, but I made sure, as we're talking about here, is to cite that source. And so that source is on each slide. So,
yeah, I think that's so important. Yeah. And not every student is going to go back and research it, but it should always be available, because one thing we encourage our students to do is I tell all my basic ACO students. So if you're listening from not here in Texas, you're required to take our basic ACO class, not ours, but you're required to take a basic ACO class in the exam in order to do animal control in Texas. And I tell my basic students who are just at the beginning of their career, usually I say, whether it's your boss, your chief of police, your city manager, your county judge, or your instructor, you should never let somebody tell you something is legal or illegal, right, wrong, whatever, without being able to back it up. So it's very common when you come to our classes, if they say things like the one I always joke about, because everybody thinks that this is a thing in Texas, is that they say it's illegal to pick blue bonnets in Texas, right? And I go, okay, well, let's open the law book and see where that law is, right? And to this date, I have never been shown it or seen it, so probably doesn't exist.
And that ties into the type of work that we do, because there's a lot of people in our profession that have this verbal policy or this verbal way that they do things, and there's the ordinance or the state statute doesn't back it up, and you're like, why are you doing this? So I love that you're doing it. That's great stuff.
Yeah, you do have to have a permit for cotton seeds and any part of the cotton bush.
The sources for that law will be cited at the end of this podcast.
It's in the ag code.
Somewhere in the ag code, which is only like 7 inches thick.
Yeah. Good.
I want to make sure people stay tuned for the supplemental report, because that's coming up. But let's I want to continue with this, because this is actually really compelling stuff. I think a lot of people want to be instructors or want to know what it takes to be an instructor. So I'm really appreciative that you have this information out there.
Yeah, like I said, we want this information to be for people who want to be instructors, but also genuinely, this is coming really from our students who continually ask us, how do we know that the person who's teaching us is teaching accurate information? How do we vet that information without having to research the entire class itself? Kind of the last thing on my list here is that instructor continuing their own education? Because what I see overwhelming with the vast majority of instructors that we have dealt with or met or talked with is that once they become an instructor, whether it's early in their career or late in their career or after their career, they just get this idea of like, well, I've done all the learning I can. And then, you know, we see that, I mean, there was an instructor here in Texas years ago who just never changed PowerPoints, never updated laws, never did anything because they were just under the assumption that nothing changed. And I'm like, no, no, no. And so like, is that instructor actively learning, not just taking hours to keep up with whatever CE requirements their state or agency may have, but are they actively taking classes and continuing their own education in their own knowledge base or expand learning a new knowledge base so that they can represent that information? Because that, I think it's so important. And like one thing Kelly and I do as business partners is we stick to what we consider ourselves experts in, right? I hate veterinary medicine and anything to do with it. It bores me to tears, but that's Kelly's love language. She likes chemicals and pus. I don't know.
She loves toxoplasmosis.
She loves, no, she loves, no, tularemia. Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah.
Tularemia.
Oh, that's yours?
Okay. Toxo is boring. Yeah, toxo is boring.
Rabies is boring. Tularemia is cool.
Toxo is boring. Wait, how do you feel about like tapeworms and roundworms though?
Well, we play my card game called Tapeworm.
Yeah.
I might have to bring it to the next one.
That sounds like a drinking game.
It could be.
HSUS, please.
I have a question for you. So as instructors, and I'm just saying that from my own perspective, I find it hard sometimes to sit in class. I'll be honest.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, instructors make the worst students.
Yeah, that's why you're only in my class.
That's
why you're only in my class for 3 minutes at a time.
Not because we're running a booth and a conference. That has nothing to do with it.
And not because I made a poor decision to put a bad video in my PowerPoint. I apologize very, very, very wholeheartedly. However,
we also didn't sit through any of the other ones before that.
So what do you do? So like for me, I research. Like I love that aspect. What do you do to keep fresh?
So we do as well. We read, I'm going to say this and I don't have the paper or study that we read this from. It was almost 6 years ago now, but there was something you had sent me that showed like when you're to do a good research, quote unquote, of say a PowerPoint or presentation, that you're looking at about, what was it, 8 hours of research for every 1 hour of presentation. And we have found that to be incredibly true, mm-hmm. considering the fact that we have some like 16 and 24 hour classes. I mean, the better part of our lives is research.
But even just like the continuing education, like last week, I sat in on a webinar about euthanasia. And it was a webinar that was geared towards veterinarians who are providing euthanasia services within their clinic, but also, you know, home euthanasias. Nothing that pertains to me. I'm not a veterinarian, but I did learn some great things from it about, what are you taking pictures of?
I'm allowed to take photos. I'm on a podcast. I'm just kidding.
Some great things about the drugs that are being used for euthanasia, some of the techniques, the perspective of pet owners and what they're going through during euthanasias. And again, it has nothing to do with me being, I'm not a veterinarian, but I teach euthanasia training here. So coming away with even just, you know, a few tidbits of new knowledge was worth that hour webinar to me when it comes to making sure the information I'm providing in class is good information, current information, and you know, something that grows the training.
Yeah, and I do the same thing. I last year finished my training to become a master herpetologist because I teach all of our reptile stuff and I own a reptile company, which I start the next module of that in March. So, you know,
good luck.
Be dead at that point. And then like Kelly also teaches a pet first aid and CPR class. And one of the things that they talk about in that class is how to take care of your pet, do first aid on your pet if it received a venomous snake bite. And, you know, I follow, we have one of the leading experts, physicians here in Texas on venomous snake bites in the whole country. And he's here in Houston. And he's doing a web chat video Zoom thing. I don't know what the kids call it these days. And then it's called Coffee and Crotalids. And it's basically two veterinarians, two physicians, and a whole host of people log in to ask questions and stuff. So we're going to be attending that so that we can get updated information and the current best practices and information on the rattlesnake vaccine and all of this from industry experts so that we're constantly challenging ourselves and challenging our material and trying to be at the forefront, because I think that's what training ultimately should do, is push this industry and ACOs and kennel attendants and shelter directors and instructors. We should constantly be pushing to better this industry, to try and be at the forefront, so that when we're, you know, when we're bringing that professional, excuse me, that professional welfare worker to the forefront, and that's constantly what we're representing as an industry, we're going to be able to have better bargaining chips for things like first responder designation, raises,
which Texas is, like, Texas is, what I've heard, there's some legislation to make ACOs first responders.
We are trying to work on it. That was one thing in our board meeting with TACA in January, was kind of where that's going to go, because legislative session will start up next year. So we kind of need to get all our ducks in the row, do the research, get all the backing information, so we can get a legislator to write the bill and bring it forward. Okay, but wait, our hope is...
We got breaking news, huh? Ray, can you just show us what's going on in your house right now? This is... We have...
Being mauled.
They do this weird thing where they play this mouth game. They play the mouth game with each other.
On your lap. I love it.
Yes, in my lap. That's usually where it happens.
This is the animal control report, so you should have dogs.
Control the animals.
Oh, wait, where's our
Come here. Before we jump into the supplemental report, I just want to make sure we got everything covered from the Humane Educators of Texas. Again, humaneeducatorsoftexas.com. Okay. We have a cat kind of somewhere on Tabitha's lap, but because of her background, it looks like a ghost cat. Which cat is that?
This is OC.
Okay.
You can get him up here. There we go. No,
he's a ghost.
He blends in. He's like a green screen.
Oh, there he is.
He's the wrong color.
Okay. I'm sorry, with all that fun animal stuff, did we have more with Kelly and Tabitha?
I lost my train of thought.
Right.
Yeah.
We got distracted by
it. I think I had a comment that I was going to make going along with what you said, is just that, you know, animal welfare in general is kind of back in the dark ages, right? Like, we have not caught up. And if we continue to teach the same stuff over and over again, we keep learning the same things, we're never going to get out of the rut. So finding new ways, and Kelly, I mean, going to classes that aren't necessarily animal welfare specific is going to open it up that you guys can teach other things. And I hope other people learn that and can take that into consideration when they're looking at CE credits. Most places, I know here in Wisconsin, if it's not already like approved by our state for our CE credits, I can contact the state vet and say, hey, I want to go to this training. Will this count for my credits? And I have not been turned down once for it. In fact, I actually, one of my times that I did a deployment with the ASPCA, I got 8 continuing education credits for it. And so, you know, that was a whole different thing, because that was experience and not with a trainer specifically. But branching out into things that you may have an interest in, you'd be surprised at how much you can bring to a training or new knowledge into the system, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. For us, I mean, just even this past year, we got our classes approved for code enforcement continuing education hours. So now not only can animal control officers get hours from us, code enforcement can get hours from us, police officers can get hours from us. So we're continuing to kind of branch out and get the information out to more professional categories, because
that's awesome.
They all bleed into each other, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess.
Yeah.
She said bleed in. Yeah, I guess with all the horrible stuff that we see, you know.
Hey, get your head out of the gutter. We don't have to have dark humor all the time.
It's true. See, this is the feedback.
Dan is dark humor.
Well, we always...
I think I actually have a sticker on my computer that says that.
It was one euthanasia playlist, one.
We always appreciate having you on the show, and I know we're going to have you back here. Is it April, Tabitha? Is that when we have you back?
March. I think March. It's me. It's at the end of March.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. So please tune in for that. And we just always appreciate your time. I think you you and best friends, believe it or not, are the two, I think, most repetitive guests that we've had on this show. Oh. Isn't that wild?
And yet you haven't had us with best friend yet.
Right.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
I'm sure best friends, if you're listening, that's a request. So come back.
I mean, we already had hotel conversations with best friends right. people. So yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, those conversations are fun. So very fun. Well, thank you so much. Again, check out the website, humaneeducatorsoftexas.com, and then humanehelp is .org. So it's so easy to get it confused, right? You know, humanehelp.org, humaneeducators.com. Check it out. And now we have another animal.
We're on all the socials as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Facebook, the Instagram, and Kelly tells me that we have a TikTok.
We haven't messed with the Tiki Talkies yet. I did get a GoPro for Christmas, so.
You should do. Watch out. You should do Tabitha dancing videos.
I do all have right. videos for stuck under the desk. We could put that on there.
Well, that people might get the wrong idea. So let's transition into the supplemental report. I'm so excited to announce this thing. This is actually something I've been thinking about for a long time on the show, having something, a segment like this. And we're, this is the inaugural, how do you say that?
Inaugural.
Yeah, that word.
The first time.
Supplemental report brought to you by the pug named, what's the pug's name, Ray?
Maggie.
Hey, Maggie. We have Maggie the pug and Ray Smith. Ray, really briefly, just let our listeners know, you've been in the animal welfare industry for a while, so your background, animal control, RVT, that type of stuff, right?
Yeah, 8 years in animal control, and I did 2 years as tech.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. So with the supplemental report today, the supplemental report is brought to you by the Humane Educators of Texas. Check them out at humaneeducatorsoftexas.com. Let's jump in. We want to hear about access to care. We talk about it all the time on the program. We think it's one of the most important areas of animal welfare, how we, you know, keep animals out of the shelter. So what do you got?
So there's been some important legislation recently in several different states for access to care. And, you know, being in Colorado, I'm going to probably start with that. So there's a new proposition that's on the ballot this year for November 144 discusses expanding telemedicine here in Colorado to vets. And it's brand new for the veterinary world. We have this, you know, with medical doctors and the aim of the bill really is to help people who don't have transportation, who can't afford it, to get care for any of their animals. And it is also supposed to help with alleviating some of the issues with our severe lack in supply of vets across the entire nation. But we have a big, big problem with that here in Colorado, despite having CSU, which is one of the best vet colleges in the nation. And so what this bill is supposed to do is help people get access to vet care for their pets. They can do visual assessments. They can do some types of diagnoses. They can potentially treat some animals through these telemedicine visits. So that's one of the things that's on the ballot this year for November. And then the other one is the 145 bill, which I'm particularly excited about because this bill is supposed to establish a new position. It's a veterinary professional associate position. And the aim of that bill is to put another type of veterinary professional in the field that can diagnose and treat patients. They can do routine checkups. They can do certain types of procedures. And that is supposed to couple with the 144, in which it helps, again, our severe lack in vets to be able to treat animals, more animals. So hopefully those end up passing here. That's on the ballot for November.
And I sent you that one from California that would allow RVTs, registered veterinary technicians, to do freaking cat neuters under the guidance of a veterinarian. And I've been talking about this. One thing I haven't shared on the program is I'm part of the Vet Shortage Task Force. And it's a thing that actually Dr. G, her podcast, The Animal Welfare Junction, she got me into this. She's a veterinarian. And we just had this conversation about why can't there be an accelerated program that just teaches spay and neuters, or even neuters. I don't care. One or the other, both. Neuters are easier. And then we have this like large scale operation where multiple people can be doing these under the tutelage or guidance of a veterinarian. So did you look, were you able to look into that one?
I looked into it some. I think that the summary that you sent me is a good overview of the program. I think it's super important. We don't utilize our techs and our RVTs to their full capacity, and we have to be creative with that. Because the need is so great. It's a serious, serious problem. It really is. And if anybody has within the last 2 years taken their dog or cat to the vet, you likely have had to schedule an appointment 3 weeks out. And when you have I wouldn't call them maybe like serious issues, but like, for example, Maggie gets ear infections all the time, chronically. I can't wait 3 weeks to get her into a vet for her ear infection. But there's some people who have to, or they can't because they can't afford it. They don't have a vehicle to get there. So doing and passing these legislative acts is supposed to help with that. We're trying to find creative solutions to be able to care for more animals in the best way possible. And one of the arguments against that I've heard is that there are some people who are concerned that these new tech positions would have a potential negative effect on the licenses of those practicing veterinarians. And my counter argument to that is, well, if you think about it, we already have mid-level positions in the veterinary world. They're called RVTs. They do things that techs can't do, and procedures to help alleviate that strain for veterinarians. So like, for instance, you have to be an RVT in order to set a cast. Or at least in most states that I'm aware of, in California, you did have to have that there. So they're really great bills. And so there's that one that's in California, that we got the couple that are here in Colorado, but they're doing it all over. And I actually just found another article this morning that they ended up passing in Quebec, up in Canada, where they have done away with certain cosmetic surgeries, right? And so that's, you know, anything from decline to ear cropping, vocal cord removal,
tail docking,
and you know, they're unnecessary procedures. So these are all really important things. And I think that there really isn't a lot of, like a lot of people out there don't know how serious this issue is, that the shelters, that vets, that techs are going through.
Bishop, being our in-house vet tech, and that's something you've been, you know, I mean, you started out 100 years ago as a vet tech, and, So you've been doing it a long time. How did, like, where what's your thoughts on all this?
I see up here a lot of times that the veterinarians don't rely on their technicians as much as they could. And so I think legally giving technicians, hey, you two, sorry, my cats are fighting. giving technicians the legal ability to actually do more absolutely could open up a whole different realm for us. I mean, like you said, cat neuters, easy peasy. We used to have a vet that would come into the shelter and, you know, we'd just lay out a table and that was just what we did on a day. And that's easy peasy. Things like that, things like, especially for the people, if you've got a dog with chronic ear infections, you know what it is when it starts happening. You know the smell. You should be able to call up your doc, say, here's a picture of my dog's ear. Can I just get the meds, you know, get a prescription? Because there is no need to get into the vet to be seen. As long as they have their annual exam, because they have to have, you know, that relationship with the veterinarian. As long as you have that, I think that absolutely this is some place that we could go and make this a whole lot easier for people. So I think it's great. And I would love to see more. All of the things that I learned to do going through my CBT course, it was amazing to me when I was going through the classes and getting told, okay, you're going to do all of this. And then I got into the clinic and they're like, the vet was taking over some of it. And I'm like, but your time can be better utilized. You can make it to more appointments if I do this. And, you know, so there's definitely some things that need to change within that world, and we can much better utilize our technicians.
And I absolutely agree. And I want to thank Ray for putting in that research. And it's something that I'm hopeful that obviously we'll get some updates from you as you get those updates. And I'm hopeful. I mean, obviously here on the Animal Control Report, that's something that we're supportive of. And I know there's been some talk with the AVMA. And again, I'm on this vet task force, this vet shortage task force. And it's really, there's a lot of conversations about what more can we do. And, you know, we had the agency of the year on last year, Lorelei Combs, talking about what they were doing with veterinarians from Mexico, bringing them in and doing some of the work that they were doing. Some just great work is out there, and we just have to keep pushing. So I just want to thank everyone for their hard work, like trying to make this access to care more accessible, lack of better words. Kind of in our last moments here on the show, Kelly, Tabitha, I wanted you to jump in see if you had any thoughts or final, you know, just points of conversation about what your thoughts are on access to care, vet techs being able to do this type of work.
This is your expertise,
not mine. I would love to see there be changes to create like the laws you were talking about, like almost a physician assistant,
yes,
like in the medical mm-hmm. world for the veterinary world.
Yes.
When I was in veterinary clinics, we called them tech appointments. So the vet techs would handle the appointments, and it'd be like boosters, you know, puppies coming in for their, you know, second, third, fourth round boosters, techs would do it. Nail trims, techs would do it. You know, suture removers, things like that. It freed up so much time for the veterinarian to take those more important meetings or appointments, or frees up time for more surgeries. So if we can kind of build on that, I think that would alleviate a lot for veterinarians. You know, cat neuters, like Ashley said, I mean, you could do those all day long. Those are so easy. even just being able to have the ability to do that would free up access for even shelters. Because how much money are shelters spending sending cats to get neutered for TNR, right? And if they could have an employee of someone who is that, you know, level, and just have a consulting veterinarian that oversees the program, how much money could shelters save, right? How many more cats could we get out neutered? So I think that would be amazing to have those changes. Here in Texas, this last legislative session, they did try and make some more access to care changes for shelters, but unfortunately they didn't pass. mainly the veterinary side argued that it was going to take money away from the veterinarians.
Yes.
If the shelters were able to get more ability to perform vaccines, to do their own sort of in-house diagnostics, things like that without a veterinarian, that was going to take away money from actual veterinarians. So the veterinary board, I guess, lobbied against it, and it didn't pass.
No, I'm really glad that you brought that up, actually, because it's actually the complete opposite.
I agree.
Opposite, because if you have these technicians who I don't necessarily want to say aren't as qualified, but they don't have the same level of education, right? If given that understanding, you then have the ability to bring more people in, more people, more money, right? Yeah. And if you have these techs doing these procedures, doing these exams, getting them out faster, processing them faster, then a good business model would be is reducing the amount spent on these exams, because you have a different level position that's doing these treatments. But if you decrease that price, you then make access to care more affordable, and you're bringing more people in to offset that cost. So you're not going to be losing any money. In fact, you'll be making more money. And that needs to be said. That needs to be out there, and to have, veterinarians who have their own practitioner, or shelters who are doing these types of procedures out to the public for revenue, is important to understand that is a good business model. You're not going to lose money. It's actually going to have the complete opposite effect.
We had that we had that same issue in a very high socioeconomic community when our shelter wanted to do a freaking vaccine clinic. And we literally had to have like almost an argument, Ray, with these veterinarians that the people that are going to come to this vaccine clinic are never going to come to your office, period. Right. That's the reality. Is so now we're, like you just said, we are bringing those people that would never, prior to having this option available, ever come to your office. We, as all these people that are the frontline animal control officers that have to almost mandate vet care, is because those people are never going to come to your office because those prices are too high. So I want to continue this conversation. We're going to have to do it on another episode because our time has kind of run out here. But this is what's such a wonderful episode, such a great way to introduce the supplemental report. Thank you for Tabitha for coining that segment. That you get all the credit there. So
very, good thing you sponsored the segment.
Good thing I sponsored.
Very awesome stuff there. We really appreciate that. We really appreciate this topic. And so we want to hear from you. Please check out our website, keepithumane.com. Check out all the socials, the Animal Control Report or Keep It Humane. You can DM us there. You can give your feedback. We need to continue this conversation, not only individually.
You're on a roll today.
But also on a large scale. So please continue to do that. Any final thoughts, Bishop?
I do. One last one. Anybody that wants more information on the topic of offering low-cost clinics but not having it impact the actual vet clinics and their financial status, check out the Humane Society's Veterinary Medical Association website. They actually have a one-hour webinar where they talk about this and they debunk all of the myths on that.
Well,
it's very good training.
Awesome.
So very cool. That's it.
That's good stuff. Tune in next week and the week after that. Please like, share, rate the podcast. We again love to hear from you. And as always, we like to say, let's continue to help
people
help
animals. Help animals.
And keep it humane.
We gotta figure this out.
We will. Keep it humane.